What do we know about God is we know about his actions. I mean, we know he's not physical, and he's not bound by time, and he's not limited, but then we know his actions. You know, he created the world, he does nisim, whatever, he does, you know, different meisim that we know about him. But how these things stem from God, or how it is that he could do such a thing, we don't really know, we don't have a positive idea about God to know about how he could or can't do something. We just see his meisim, and we know that they come from a source, which we call God. You know, like the way you'd say it, how did that guy hit that home run so far? So you'd say, well, look at the size of his muscles and the force that he could generate based upon his, you know, whatever, whatever, and you could figure it out. So since you have a good positive picture of what a person is and his muscles and his whatever, so you could figure out what's possible, what's not possible. You know, but I don't really see the force of saying, since God's not physical, how could he, or since he's in time, he's not in time, how could he make things in time? I don't know. Why is that? It's not a piece of him or whatever. We say he created. I mean, this action, it has a cause, and the cause is God. You know, I just don't hear the force behind saying, since he's not physical, so how could he do actions that are physical? Well, he created that. He created physical. So that's, I mean, this question, how could he create, how could something, Yeshmein, how could something come from nothing? I don't know. It's true.
That's like, I guess, sort of, but like, it seems like there's certain definitions that we can be sure about.
Yeah.
Like his perfection. But like, certain things would, like, his creation would seem like a flaw.
Why?
Because of what we're saying, that him creating something would be, I don't know, I guess they could see that. It's hard because you're right, like, there's no way to, I don't know, his.
We just see this cool thing which he created. Now, what is that? The universe, awesome, whatever. Now, why is that a flaw that he did it? It's physical. You're fine, but he's not physical. He's just creating something which is physical. Just because you create something doesn't mean that that indicates something about you. Like, he's saying he created this thing, and it's cool. So he's saying, why is that an imperfection that he can't create something which is cool, but it's not, it's physical? Like, why does that indicate there's a problem with him because he created something physical? I just don't see that. You think it over.
Yeah.
You know, formulate that. I think maybe you have some idea that you're kind of intuiting, but I think you have to, you know, try to spell that out a little better. You know, what exactly is bothering you? Maybe it's based on something you heard. You're kind of like putting it, you know, I mean, you have to formulate your problem. Think it over and formulate the question like more strongly. But that's kind of what I need you to do. Like, give an argument why these things indicate some sort of limitation or indicate something about God. The thing we know about God is his ma'asim. We know two things. We know negative things about his essence and positive things about his actions. So we know he's not physical, he's not in time. You know, things we know about him are things that he's not. He's not, you know, he's not limited by space, he's, you know, doesn't have a beginning, things like that. But in a positive sense, we only know about his actions. Anything we say positive about God is a description of his actions.
And the actions just as results, right? Like, you don't know how they come about.
Right, just a description of his actions. Right. The description of his actions. Just like, I mean, we did this in the blog, but as a mashal, so this, I guess, is maybe perhaps a longer discussion, but let's say an electron. So an electron, let's say, attracts, you know, charges, positive charges, positive charges. But we don't know anything, like, as far as science knows, it's like an electron is like a point particle. There's no internal structure of an electron. So then what about an electron attracts? Like, what is it? What about it does it? Like, anything else, you saw how a machine attracts, because you see its parts, and you see their interactions and whatever. But we don't know anything about an electron, as far as we know. It's just the point. It doesn't even have, like, an internal structure. So what does that mean? How does it act? Well, we don't know. It just does. You know, so like, there's, you see, this comes a thing where you could describe an action of a thing, even though all you know about it is what it does. But you don't know, you can't further go into what is it. We just know, apparently we describe it based upon its action. You know?
It's
emotional, yeah. So you see, apparently scientists are happy with saying is that, you see, scientists are fine with that. So apparently in your mind, you could say is that I know something about, I'm just describing the action. Now it doesn't mean, even though other things that we know which act, we know that a pull or attract have many parts to them, but scientists think that there is no parts to them. It doesn't have parts. So what do they call a point particle? But whatever. But it does act. You know that? How? I don't know. That's all we've done. So it's describing a thing through its actions. But we don't know anything about it other than what it does. So I think that's kind of the way that the Lamashal. I mean, I'm not saying God's an electron. But just in that regard, you see that there's an idea. When we talk about God, we know that the actions which emerge from him. But what about him? How is that possible? No, he doesn't have muscles and he doesn't do anything, you know. But he's not physical, any of these things. But things which we know that act, besides electrons, seem to have all these different parts and whatever. But God's not that. So we know what he isn't. And then we also know the actions which emerge from him. But like when we say God is Racham, so it means actions which we would call Rachamim emerge from God, are caused by God. And therefore we call him Racham. That's a positive term. It's merciful, but that's what we mean. We mean those actions which we call Racham emerge from him. But what about him is we don't know. You know? So whenever you use a positive term, it's always either positively describing his actions, or it's negative knowledge about him. Like, Wachad means he's one, he doesn't have parts. It's not his actions, but it means he doesn't have parts. Something like that. Hey. How's he going up? You can take Ezra's seat. He's going up.
So that, is supposed
to
be a seat? No.
It is.
Not for you.
It's a seat. It's really comfortable. Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
You hear what I'm saying?
I hear what you're saying about the idea. I think of sort of God with the Yishmai idea. I like.
You can't understand. You can't really understand. So you can't, we don't have enough knowledge about the thing to have like a positive question. It's more like, I don't get it. How does that happen?
But is it true though that like when, let's say, I create something? See, the thing is that whenever I create something, it's always from something that already exists.
Right.
So the question just boils down to like, how can it be Yishmai?
Right.
And is that from Hashem? No, it can't be, because then so I guess that's what that's okay. That's the question.
Right. It's funny because I heard there's like I think Rabbi mentioned this, but there's like another thing we have on the blog is an article from Stephen Hawking, which basically talks about the new claim is that the universe created itself from nothing.
Maybe
it's multiverse. I don't know. It's just they say the universe came about by itself from nothing. You know, like from nothingness emerged the universe. You know. Quantum fluctuation not in nothingness.
Oh, right. Nothingness is unstable.
Yeah, right. Nothingness is unstable. Exactly. Nothingness is unstable. So there's a quantum fluctuation in nothingness, and yeah, something came from nothing. But like I think Rebbe said, it's like all these years, the big kasha was, how could God be true? Because you're saying, yeah, God created something from nothing, but that's impossible. That was a big kasha on God. Now that they see there's something from nothing, they say, ah! Something from nothing. Science explains it. It's a scientific explanation. Something comes from nothing. You know, but it was like a logical impossibility. How could it be that God could create something from nothing, you know? But now it's, you know, not only is it possible, that's actually scientifically what happens. You don't even need God to do that. Just some nothingness. Yeah. But even that, even their thing doesn't really mean something from nothing, because it has to be from the quantum whatever. Framework can't really be a quantum fluctuation in something. They're just saying, presumably they mean nothing physical, but then there's some, I don't know, something has to exist.
Sounds absurd.
Yeah.
Quantum fluctuation is a property of the physical universe.
Yeah, I don't know. You look at it. You know, look, he has that article. It's It sounds ridiculous. No, you'll see. It sounds like
sci-fi. Nice sci-fi novel.
That was one of the things that got started on the whole thing. Is that article by Hawkins. You just see like what they're reduced to, you know, like these great, you know, the top geniuses in the world are saying this stuff that's such nonsense, you know. You know, but they have to, you know. It's like the evidence points to it's either that or God. So, you know. Yep. Okay. Anything else?
I have a little bit of like a weird question.
A weird question. Okay.
So you can dismiss it.
I can dismiss it. Okay. Okay. Do we have a backup in case the weird question is too weird that I have to quickly turn to something else? Okay.
No,
go ahead. It's hard for me to turn it down at this point.
No, I mean, once I say it, I didn't even know
that. Oh, okay, yeah.
I was just thinking, like, we approach the Torah, like, very rationally, you know? But there are definitely people out there that don't. It's, like, it's mystical and things like that. So, like, what if they would argue, like, that if you just look at the Torah itself and look at, like, what a lot of, like how the Torah talks about things, like it does seem that it's like a mystical and like a magical thing, and like you would think that God is a physical being with hands and has emotions, he gets angry, he gets jealous. And like, in other words, like we have more explaining a way to do than they do. So like, they could say like it's very nice that you're like trying to superimpose this rational thing onto the Torah, but the Torah itself is not really rational, like you're making apologies, you're being like that.
Right.
Apologetic about it. Like,
right. Well, the Torah does talk about that. We didn't see any form, and God doesn't have on Sinai. Kidoros and Kotamuna, and it's like.
A little bit. But by and large, it's more like.
Pleasure by and large.
I'm saying that's like a little bit of like a movie you have to make. Like, part of that, it's like pleasure.
You're saying it's a cop out answer to them?
A little bit, yeah.
It's true, but you see how the Torah is so against the Avodah Zarah and against the idea of any physical images or anything. Is if anything, that's... I mean, you could just say, well, if you don't think about that and you don't analyze it, then it's just whatever, for some reason, Torah doesn't want it.
Well, they're gods.
What?
There are other gods you can't...
Oh. Yeah, but it also
it's
about...
God you can't...
Yeah, but even images of our God, you can't make any images of a God. Can't worship any images, you can't have any representative of God, and the God at the Sinai specifically made it that there was no vision, nothing you could see, totally a fire, that was like specifically the point, you know, that's emphasized many times. So it's true, it says Yad Hashem, so you have the Stira, on the one hand it says Yad Hashem, then it says there's no any form, and you could say, oh, of course he has hands, but he didn't want to show it to you because it's a secret. I mean, you could say, you know.
You're saying that's also a move that they have to make.
Yeah, they also have to make that. It's just like, yeah, right. Right. I think so. And one is like an... I feel there's a difference between an expression and where the Torah is explicitly, you know, talking like ideationally. An expression is Yad Hashem is one thing. Another thing which says that you should know that the God didn't see any form and there God says it and you're not allowed to make any forms. Like that's in terms of where it's actually giving you ideas. As opposed to just an expression, so Yad Hashem could mean, you know.
It's like assuming the conclusion that it is an expression.
Oh.
It doesn't have to be an expression.
Yeah. I guess also is like the Torah wasn't exactly meant to be studied just as like a book without any interpretation. You know, there's Tor Shel Bal Peh. And Tor Shel Bal Peh, it's clear, like Unkelus, for instance, is all these things. He makes all these things and it shows that he makes them all non physical. You know, and it's like a clear Besorah that God's not physical and doesn't have a body. I mean, I guess there are people who have been debated over the years, but, like, no, not, like, real people, you know? So, just, like, that's like, clear. It's in the Mesorah. So, it's true. Maybe some Bible scholar who doesn't accept Tor Shel Bal Peh, you know, just picks up the book will come to some other conclusion, but I don't know that the Torah was meant to be convincingly, that the interpretation of Torah Baal Peh is a convincing interpretation purely based on Torah Shavuot Sav. Like, it's clear from Torah Shavuot Sav that there's Torah Baal Peh, and that it was meant to be interpreted through the Lama Zohar. You know, like it says, you have a question, you ask them, and you know, there's given without everything being explicit, many details which are clearly reliant upon the Masorah and the Torah Baal Peh. And as such, that's the way it's meant to be interpreted. So I don't know that the goal of the Torah was to write it in a way that would be that there's an answer to that question purely based on Torah Shavuot Sav. You know, I mean, maybe there is, but I just don't know that that has to be. You know, I mean, I don't exactly see the primary, you know, where the question is coming from, because it's not, that's not the Zohar, that's not Torah Shavuot Sav.
What about like sort of like if you looked at like statements of Chazal, people that think that, let's say, every single thing that happens in the world is like Mashiach, like God has a hand in everything, so to speak, yeah. Like also, like to say otherwise and to like reinterpret Midrash Rabbah literally is also a little bit of like a move that we have to make, yeah.
Versus,
if you hold that, yeah.
Right, but you see, all the Rishonim don't have that. Nisan has a book which he basically has every single Rishon he's looked into. About the Hashkacha.
Hashkacha.
The Hashkacha point.
Who
has the book? Nisan Harel. Right. It's like a PDF. They compile all the different. I don't know if that affects your question or not, but I'm just saying.
I don't know if it's a defined question. That's why it's a little bit weird, but it's, you sometimes get the impression that, like, you could read a Rashi or you could read, like, a statement of Chazal and, like, it sounds crazy, and you could try to give, like, an explanation for it, but, like, I feel like on some level you feel like that's, like, a nice rational idea, but that's, like, not really what they were saying. Like, it's a mystical thing that sounds crazy to me.
Right.
I don't know if that's exactly the question.
Right.
Just get a sense like that sometimes.
Right.
Is that what you're asking, or is that a
part? I think it could be. that could be why I get that sense.
Right.
Because like
they don't actually mean it. Why they write it like that?
Yeah, right. Does it also bother you that when you're doing the Gemara, they don't actually say the Sfarah?
No.
That doesn't bother you.
There's no reason.
I'm serious. Is it
no,
it's
like that's like that? Not the goal necessarily.
To give stories.
They're trying to like work out a lot. And it's like kind of terse, it's not going to like lengthily go through the story. It's not the style thing.
Well, there are different reasons given of why they talk like that. I don't know if we're allowed to give answers if that's going to satisfy the way you feel. Mm-hmm. But like one reason they say, oftentimes it's because there's some idea which they don't want to say openly. Which is, I mean, you have to analyze a particular chazal and see. You know, it's like, it's harder to work in generalities. It might be easier to work by examples, you know, and if we ever do one, maybe you could, you know. But like, oftentimes it's an idea which is like, not like a subtle idea or a dangerous idea or an idea that people aren't necessarily ready for. They kind of say, couch it in some sort of metaphor.
Can I use an example?
Or? Sure.
So we're talking about Zimmer once, that the Mishnah Berurah says that like if you, you should like light your Shabbos candles in the place where you have your Suda, so that you can like look at the whole scene and it's like, and it's nice, and that's like a segula for weak eyes, you know, or going to be recognized. Like, you had a whole shot about it, you know, but, like, it kind of made sense, but at the same time, it's like, that seems like...
Is it Gemara, or is
that... That's what we should be saying. I don't know. I'm not sure.
That's just science.
Right.
It's on the right. You're not going to reach it off. All the way under, on the Markowitz. It's on the Markowitz, yeah.
It's mine now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you have to trace these things and see where they come from and see, you know, each, I don't know the idea of that one, I don't know who's shot, and I don't know where it's from, and I don't, you know, it's hard for me to give a particular opinion about that. But, I mean, yeah, it's hard to talk. I mean, I like the idea of an example, but I don't know the shot in that example, and I don't know where it's from, and I don't have to kind of see. But oftentimes it's like that. Oftentimes there's like, I don't know. I think the Rashba says sometimes they talked in like exciting things like that in order to get people's attention. There's some guy that said a story, you know, he was an example. He basically talked in a very like, you know, exaggerative way to wake people up or something like that. You know, it's like more interesting. And sometimes also he says in order to test the people. In order to test the people's, like suppose they pose riddles to them to kind of try to help, the, you know, work their mind and let them think of something like that. But I don't know. I guess the question is like, if you know a person to be a chacham, then you could assume that he, there's, I think the Rebbe says, at least quoted the Rambam, says something like that, is that it's a derech of chacham, that if you know someone to be a chacham, then you assume that if he says a chacham, you don't assume what he says is stupid, you know? So if you know that this doesn't make any sense, you know the Shmuel's a chacham, then you assume that's not what he meant. You know, just a derech of Allah. Now, you could say that's what he meant, and it doesn't make any sense. You know, and that's just the way it is. And, but you assume that he's not, that he's a chacham. But, like, you assume that what he said is, you know, I guess if you know, you know, assuming that you know certain things you know to be true, so if you know they make sense, and then you don't assume someone else is, saying something which in your mind you know is crazy. But yeah, I guess maybe next time, you know, we encounter a particular idea like that, you could ask it. It's like hard to take someone else's idea that I'm not familiar with and do it, you know, but like maybe bring it up next time we come to something like that, you know, or if you could come up with an example that was, you know, that I said, might be easier for me to try to defend. You know, but it could be going forward also, you know. Yes?
Just maybe like to be more clear about it, could you give us like what the best way to get, like, you see a measure that doesn't necessarily make sense.
Right.
What's the derech? Like, for a different thing, but. Yeah,
derech.
What's the derech? Like, are you supposed to, like, try to make sense of it, or are you trying to, like, want to say, well, actually, maybe it could be, like, trying to make sense of it, and like try to make it, just say like it's a metaphor, or say, well, it could be that he was really 10 feet tall. He had like.
Well, I mean, if it's clearly ridiculous, then I think you have to assume it's a metaphor. You know, I mean, sometimes it's not clear, but I mean, you have to think into it. It's hard to know, but I mean, you have to think into it. If it sounds crazy, then it probably is. Probably a metaphor. If you're saying he's 10 feet tall and he's jumping 10 feet, and he's—I mean, you could just assume like all kinds of stuff, but I mean, presumably it's a metaphor. You know, I mean, sometimes it's not always clear, but I think in general, if it sounds like that, there's no reason to, you know, assume what's it trying to teach you. I think with any of these things, whether they're a metaphor or not a metaphor, the question is, what's the point? What's the point of the Chazal? You always have to ask yourself, if it's literal, what's the idea they're trying to convey? Whether it's literal or it's not literal, what's the idea? Just to tell us a crazy random story, which a literal story, like, what's the point? Okay, fine, so he's 10 feet tall, jumped 10 feet tall, like, therefore what? Therefore, whoa, exciting. You know, like, what's the point? What's the punchline? So, even if it is literal, there got to be an idea which is conveyed by that story, so... Whatever. So treat it like literal. It almost, once you get an idea, it doesn't really... Just because literal doesn't mean there's no idea to the thing. Like, what's the... Why are Chazal telling us? There's a lot of crazy stories according to that way. But what's the point of them? What's the message? You know? Yeah, that's like I, what?
Maybe they're just telling you what happened.
But what's the point, though? Like, what's the point of telling you what happened? Like, if the point is, like, just to give...
Just telling you history?
Like, I know, like, for instance, I've been to these things with my kids' school. They tell stories, and they quote these midrashim. And, like, they tell a whole story. It's kind of upsetting, you know, but tell the whole story. It's like all medrash and this and that, and he jumped in to Gan Eden, and then Muhammad grabbed his sword, and he this, and I don't know, it's a whole, like, story. And then, like, damn, they say, wow, isn't that a nice medrash? Okay. And that's it, you know? It's like, that's it. Beautiful medrash. You know, like, there's no, like, is there a message? Like, I don't mind if you want to pretend, like, you want to take it like a literal story, but okay, from here we learn that it's important to always be a tzaddik, or I don't know, something. Just like, wow, and isn't that a beautiful medrash? It's like, what's the point? It's just to tell, like, I understand it's the first through fifth graders, you want to entertain them with a cool story. That's like, you know, that's a nice story time, but is that what the Maharas are trying to do, just to entertain us and give us cool stories? Like, even like, you know, you tell something to a group of adults, they're looking for some message. Like, what's the message? Just to tell us a bunch of us, it's not a story time. It's like, that's good for kids, story time. But that's, presumably Gemara is not just about story time, just telling us interesting stories that tickle our imagination and keep us entertained for a few minutes. It's got to be some, like, import. This is a system which we're supposed to, you know, grow towards perfection about the Hashem. Something. Is there something which we could gain from the story? So it's almost like, sometimes you could assume it's literal and say, okay, fine, so what do we learn from that? And then it's almost like it becomes academic, whether it's literal or not literal. Whatever, it did happen, didn't happen, who cares? You know? Yeah.
Is there a danger, like, it sounds like there is a danger to take something literally, because then you could be neglecting your mom.
Well, it depends what it is. Like, let's say that example of, let's say that the daughter of Paro. I mean, I haven't fully analyzed that, but the idea of her arm stretched out, you know?
Right.
So let's say it means literally arms are shattered, or let's say it doesn't mean that, but it means something like she went through some sort of super duper effort and managed to, like, some hashgacha that she managed to, like, run and to be there and to stretch and to run and get it, whatever, you know? Something like that, that she was assisted by God in being able to, like, some super, you know, to really get it. So it's almost like, look, maybe there's a miracle. Does it matter? Like, let's say it means God actually made a miracle and stretched her hand, or God just assisted her in being able to, like, some great chase scene, like in a movie, and managed to get it at the last second, you know what?
Prince of Egypt.
Yeah, I don't see that, but yeah. What happened? Is there a miracle there, or is it just, like, she manages to...
What happens is, like, the Teva is, like, goes down the Nile and gets, like, then turns into, like, all these wild animals are trying to get it, and then... Like, the current really, like, escapes all this stuff.
Right, but it's not miraculous. It's just, like, a wild, like, chase scene in a movie.
Yeah, exactly.
You're right. So, like, maybe it means that. Now, how is all those things happen to work out? Yad Hashem, that God is, you know, there's Hashgacha, that Moshe Rabbeinu should emerge, and he was saved through the extraordinary means. Now, does it matter? Now, it doesn't matter, really, whether you say God made a miracle or God made all these things work out. What's the difference? Now, do you hurt yourself by thinking God made a miracle? I don't know. God does miracles. If it needed a miracle, maybe God would have done a miracle. But, you know, like, it doesn't matter that much. Like, it depends on how you're twisting your mind. But, like, again, we don't hold miracles are impossible.
Right.
Just in general, God doesn't need the miracles to do everything. In general, there's a loss of nature. And in general, these things could really work out without miracles. Now, we know Nisim Mitzrayim, that was the whole point, to show everybody that God's in charge, and miracles were necessary for that. Fine, that we know. That was a unique thing, and, you know, the Torah seems to make a big deal about it, that there were certain times of the Nisim Gluyim, and in general, that's not the Derech of the Torah. God made a big deal. These are the time God did all these miracles to last the Dorei Doros, to show everybody. So it seems like, in general, the Derech of the Torah isn't to always have miracles all over the place. But at the same time, there were, time of Eliyahu, there are miracles. You know?
Sure.
He did, like, and that's, you know.
What? There could be not
for me to
whether they actually happened or not. So.
It could be. Sometimes, I don't know. Depends on the case. But it's it could be. But oftentimes the difference is, like, the idea ends up being the same. Like, I think Rabbi once explained the stories of Eliyahu. He said the people at that time were at a low level and they needed to be moved by the miracles. There's such a thing as people who, like, aren't reachable through pure chachma and, like, through doing miracles, it gets to people, draws their emotions in, and then you can talk to them. And there was a time where there were Nevi'im, and there was a reality, and there were times God did the miracles to teach people, just like God taught the Mitzvah through miracles. So there is such a thing as that. It's just that in general, we know that the general default is that there are laws of nature. And miracles seem to be like out of the ordinary, through Nevi'im or through people that are, you know. But, you know, I think about oftentimes, the focus should be on what the idea is, and I don't know how important it is. Maybe sometimes it's an achmina, but I think more important should be when you see a chazal, is like, what's the idea that's trying to be conveyed? Like in that case, well, you could think forever, did her hand stretch out, their hand not stretch out? What's the point? The point is, there's hashkacha for Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not an accident. Moshe Rabbeinu had to happen, and it was in the plans of hashkacha that Moshe Rabbeinu would exist. And even though the laws of nature were such that it's a good chance he would have died, God made sure that he didn't, you know? And that's a nice idea, or something like that, you know? And then it almost falls by the wayside of whether, how did it work out exactly? That's like curiosity, did he make her hand stretch out, or did he do this, or did he do that? You could have a lot of different ways that it could happen, but who really cares? You know? And I think oftentimes that's the case, and oftentimes that's why I think when you see a chazal, you should try to focus on, like, what's the concept that we're learning. But let's assume it were literal. What would be the concept that it's trying to teach us? And then, well, maybe it isn't. Maybe if that's what we're literal, that's the concept. Maybe that's all that it is. It's just a way of telling your story in order to convey that concept. You know?
Right.
So I don't know if that works always, but I think that's like one klal, like, whenever you hear things. You should be like, okay, what's the point? Like, what's the idea? What do you learn from this chazal? What's the point which they're trying to convey to you? What new concept? What new idea? If you just like that's another, remember, back in the day, we always like, I remember this is like a thing, like sometimes your speech, and maybe this is something you're conveying also, is like, we were like lamenting once about some Dvar Torah, when I was back in the yeshiva guy, you know, some Dvar Torah we heard from something, and you just like, if at the end of a speech someone gives, you just say, okay, what's the idea? Like, what could I take from the thing? Like, what new idea is being said? Other than it's good to be a good person, or I don't know, something like that, or you know, it's like, what are you learning? Like, what's the whole Dvar Torah? Just to say the same message that you say every single Dvar Torah is like, what's the point? You know, and I think that could be the case for somebody who's like, let's say a Baal Musar. I think it'd be someone from our yeshiva. You know, oftentimes you could just every single chazal could just be recycling the whole idea that man has emotions, and man has a mind, then you have to use your mind, and or I don't know, some like canned idea that we have, you know? It's just like, I think in general, ideas of every chazal, from my experience, there's always subtleties, and every chazal is telling you something different, a little bit different. And just the stuff in the old ideas into a chazal, it's not really being true to the chazal. You know, the point is trying to discover, you know, send me to trying to discover what, you know, trying to figure out what to subtly pick up on the details of the chazal and try to get in touch with what they're trying to convey to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's not exactly a method. I don't know of a step-by-step method. You know? Yes?
What would you say is the function of art? Theater, music, poetry, film, you know, go to a museum,
right?
Drawing, stuff like that.
The function of it.
Yeah. What? It's clearly something. It's clearly a big part of being human. Big part of human experience. It's all over all cultures. All, you know, throughout all of history, starting with the earliest of humans. I think even it like extinct human ancestors too. So like, what is it like why is it such a like important, clearly very like central and innate element of the human experience?
I'm not sure exactly. Are you asking like a philosophical, psychological, social, like what's the nature of your question? Like, why psychologically people are drawn to it, or like what the philosophical value of it is?
Yeah, what's
does it have philosophical value?
Yeah, what's its value, what's its function, what's its benefit,
what do we gain from having it as a cornerstone of our lives?
Well, is there an assumption that it's a good or not necessarily? Like just because something is like you could trace, for instance, idolatry back to way back when for a lot of different ancestors and like every culture, every everything. But
well, you could call it idolatry, or you could call it a search for truth.
Well, you could say like bowing down to physical. Fine, but you could say like bowing down to physical personification of like physical forces and making up gods and bowing to them and worshiping them, and you know, so. You could say that's like, what's the value of that?
Well, it's the same value that definitely has value too. I mean,
the Torah doesn't seem to think so.
No, I'm saying like the value of that is in the search.
Well, not really.
If you don't have a curiosity about a higher power, then how are you ever going to find the correct viewpoint?
Well, that's true, but I mean, I don't think the Torah holds that the desire for Avodah Zarah and the desire for God come from the same place. I mean, desire for Zara comes from, like, wishes and fears and, like, one's emotions, and desire, the idea of God comes from one's intellectual pursuits. So, like, a person has fears, and they invent gods to quell those fears or to satisfy their fantasies and their wishes. But the idea of God, Hashem, stems from an intellectual pursuit of the source and the cause of the universe.
Okay, so, based off of the, I guess you'd say, fact that the Torah itself uses, like poetry, for example, uses art in its conveying its material, we can assume that it's a good thing.
Okay. Like, for instance, what, like Tehillim?
No, Shir.
Shir. A Shir Shalom or a Shir?
Yeah, like the concept of a Shir.
Okay.
Is art.
Like Shir and the Mikdash or something like that.
Everything.
And making
the Mishkan beautiful.
Okay.
Having Bitzal, you know, it's chashuv, it's an important thing.
Right. That's true.
So what's its
function in Torah?
Yeah.
Wasn't that like Zakir Anbeh, like to draw your emotions so that you'll be eventually attracted to the intellectual sphere of Torah itself? Is there an end in just the beautification itself?
Right. That's a good question. I mean, that's certainly the case. Those examples, at least. I mean, maybe we have to pursue, you know, there's a broader question than, like, your original, it's not the same question as your initial question.
We can start there, and then I'm opening the entire thing.
I understand, right, I understand. But that's like, I'm just, my first point is like, just because it's found in throughout antiquity and in all cultures or whatever, doesn't necessarily mean it's a good or a bad or an anything. It just is. Like, murder is probably found in whatever, you know, whatever. Just like, the fact that it's found doesn't mean it's good, it just means it's found.
Yeah.
You know, but now you, then, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But now you're saying it is found in Torah, so let's start there, you know, because that, if it's in Torah, it must be, it has a value in Torah. And then we could, you know, then branch outwards and see about, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I think in Torah, I mean, we could pursue different examples as it comes up and see if this fits in. But at least from the few examples cited so far, it would seem to be is that man's, like you said, man throughout the ages does have an attraction to these things. It's part of man's emotional life that he's attracted to beauty and to music and to art and to good, you know, beautiful things and all that. And the Torah talks to a person, draws a person in, and it holds that a person's entire self should be attached to the truth, to God. So the experience, for instance, of coming to the Mikdash was an all multimedia, multi-part of the personality experience. You'd come to the Mikdash because you're a chotei or whatever, and you'd go there and you'd see the beauty, and you'd hear the music, and the Kohan would be teaching you ideas, and you'd like, the whole experience would talk to you on many levels, so that you'd be walk out of there and like every part of you was involved in being attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, it was like a full experience that they took that, you know, talk to a person every part of the person was moved, you know? So draws their emotions. First you come in there and you're drawn by the emotions, by the beauty of the thing, and the music, and the smell. And then you go there, and then all of a sudden the Kohanim are telling you ideas, and they're explaining to you Kansa Halachos. They explain to you that this Kli in the Mikdash is to show you this idea about a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And then it's like your mind is engaged in the whole experience, you know? It's almost like a similar example would be like, Zohar once wanted to say Pshat in like the tent of Sarah. That Sarah's tent had like great bread and like the light on it and the cloud and like, but like what Avraham Avinu is doing in setting up this Eshel or whatever is that he taught people ideas, but it's very, people do have emotions. So if you give them good food and you give them a nice warm place to sit, you know, maybe even a jacuzzi, then they could, you know, like you talk to the whole personality. So the experience, you know, a person's, you know, his entire self is involved in the experience of the ideas, you know. So I think in that sense, I'd say the Torah recognizes these desires as part of a personality. Just like, for instance, I'd say, let's say a person's desire for sex and for food, you know, like on a Shabbos, for instance. So if a person takes the desire for sex and makes that his life, then that's like an empty life. And I'd say if a person takes food and makes that his whole life, then I'd say he's missing the point. And I'd say if a person takes art and makes that an ends in its own right, or music, and then also it's like it's not grounded in anything. But at the same time, there are parts of the person has an instinct that he enjoys sex and he enjoys food and he enjoys art and he enjoys music and he enjoys whatever. And it's so far as a person, the Torah could talk to a person on satisfy a person and direct all those components towards a true objective. So the music could be directed towards the Rosh Hashem. Your appreciation of beauty could be satisfied in the Mikdash, and your desire for sex could be part of Shabbos and your experience of Shabbos. You know, so, but I think if a person takes art or music or any of these things and makes them a value and an ends in their own right, then I'm not sure what that is, but I don't see that as a value. I would think there's probably something off about that in Torah. I have to analyze what exactly it is. But it doesn't seem like the Torah, that's like setting up like an alternate value. So that, you know, like it's just like, it's almost like making the emotional experience like a value in its own right. And that's not man's essence, and that's, you know, that's like making sex and enjoyment in its own right. It's like more sublime and refined than sex, but it's, I'd say it's in the same type of a thing. It's just valuing the instinctual experience, or the, it's more like, I guess, you know, higher than sex, it somehow feels that way, but I don't know that it really is. It's just, it's a different type of an instinct, which is, you know, and if that becomes like an end in its own right, I feel like towards what, you know, this makes you feel a certain way.
If we look at situations in which involve the greatest degree of attachment to God,
yeah.
For example, you know, like we were talking about before, Kriyas Yamsu, or, you know, if you look at David HaMelech, his choice way of relating to God with, you know, the music and the poetry and everything, you know, we see that, you know, we're talking about, you know, art and these things come into play at those moments and in those ways. Would you say that might indicate that it could be more than just a draw in, it could also be an enhancement within itself?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think the times where you have it, like let's say I was Yashir, and I think a lot of the halacha of Shira is like when we're saved, like by Kriyas Yamsuf, or when David HaMelech was saved from his enemies and he sings Shira.
Or Dvorah.
Yeah, right, Dvorah, when she was saved and they won the victorious in the war, you know. So, and the halacha of Hallel is when a person is saved, when there's an ace or something that is saved. So I think like a salvation like that moves a person's emotions. So now it's like God becomes real to a person, not just intellectually, but emotionally, because of the intense experience that, you know, he just witnessed. So then it's like the whole personality is moved to express the praise of God. His emotions, his whole, he's overjoyed, he's drawn to song, you know? Like, maybe sitting back and learning a Tosis isn't going to draw a person's emotions in, it's more of an intellectual experience. But there are experiences which involve the body and involve a physical type of unbelievable salvation that now moves your emotions, and then your emotions get on board, and now you move to song, and you want to express that. But the song conveys the ideas. So it's like there's a unification of expression of the personality, and you know, when he does that.
Seems like a great example of this would be when David moved the Aaron, you know.
And he was dancing when he...
Yeah,
right.
Along with it?
Yes, correct. Right. He was excited. He was like very happy that he had the Aaron, overjoyed. And, you know, that moved him to express himself emotionally. But he, of course, he was tied in with ideas and the concepts.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's like a full simcha.
Was he rebuked for that?
His wife rebuked him for it, but she was rebuked for rebuking him. She was punished for that. I think it says she didn't have a kid or something. So that was a mistake.
But she died.
Michal. Yeah, something like that. But that was a mistake. He says that in Moses Hashem, there's no kavod adam when it comes to your kavod of the Aaron and of Hashem. You can't put your own human dignity at there's no place for that. You dance and you look wild and whatever, but he's excited about the kavod shemayim, and therefore the kavod of the malach even has to. She said, "You're going to look like a fool to the simpletons," you know. He said, "No, it doesn't. There's no place for me to worry about myself when I'm involved in kavod shemayim," and he was right. She was wrong. Yeah.
It's interesting because there seems to be like this almost like this conflict that exists throughout, like, of there's like perspective seems to be very like important, like, but at the same time, like, there's something like that where it kind of puts that aside, and there seems to be like a that doesn't seem to be so important here, but then it gets overridden with some like greater idea. I mean, but there's still definitely like people can definitely still look at him and say, like, what is he doing? He looks ridiculous. So why does it not matter, like, that in that case? But, like, in some cases there's an idea of Hashad.
Right. I guess, because there's a true idea that the person should be excited by Kvod Shemayim and by the Aaron, and that's true. And if a person's not in touch with that, and therefore, because of their shallow thing, thinks that he looks like a fool, but that's their problem. I think in general we're concerned about what people think when there's some truth to it. Like, if we do something unethical and it's a chal Hashem, which is not, you know, fully on the books, and someone looks at it and that's bad, that's a chal Hashem. But if someone's going to say, hey, those tefillin, those look crazy. But look at that guy praying to God. Who does he think he is? He thinks he can pray to God. That's their problem.
They so that falls into that category.
I think so. That's the thing. Is that someone's going to think that because they don't understand the idea. But the idea is a true idea. There's nothing wrong with it. On the contrary, it's a perfection. It's perfection to be totally forget yourself when you're before God. And the kavod adam is nothing. Hashem. The kavod adam is, yes, it's important in your ordinary dealings with people to have kavod and to treat yourself. The king has to, you know, command the respect. But when it's him before God and the Aaron, then there's no place for human dignity. And that's a true idea.
So with the case of, like, I know Hanukkah we did, like we work with, where you have to be madlik the neros because of chashad, but you really fulfill the mitzvah. I mean, you're doing everything that's right.
Right.
But in that case, wouldn't that be a case of the same thing? You're doing something that's
right.
That's true and right. And,
That's a good question. Well, that's just saying you have to do more. To do the mitzvah in a way which it's clear that you did the mitzvah, because you don't want somebody to think
so that's
that
a lacking in the mitzvah that you're saying, right?
It's like you're doing it in a way. Mitzvah should be done in a way that it's manifest and clear that we're doing them, and then that you don't look like a schatz. But that's, I mean, I hear what you're saying. It's an interesting question. You know, that's kind of what?
Like, you didn't do anything wrong with it.
You what?
You didn't do anything wrong with
it. If you like neither, if you like both.
No,
I know. Well, the thing is, you may not know that you did one.
I'm saying before this institution,
Hashem is not. Right, I understand, right? You're not doing anything wrong. It's true, but it's not like you're doing something wrong by... It's a little different. She's telling him that he shouldn't worship God properly. Here, just saying is that you should go beyond and light another menorah in order to make it clear that you lit on it in your house. so that people don't get the wrong idea. But that's the, they're not telling you to do something wrong. They're just saying is that you have to, you want to do the mitzvah in a way that it's manifest, that
it's not
negative.
It's like taking away from
his... Yeah, right. Taking away from his perfection, his service of God, because you worry about what other people are going to think. You're just saying...
You don't have to do that.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. Yeah, and they're just thinking that you didn't like because they don't see it. They don't see the other side, so they think you didn't like. It's not like they have a wrong idea. It's not like they have a wrong philosophical idea. They just don't see your house. They see one side. They assume you. They assume that, oh, look at this. This guy didn't like. So that's going to create a wrong idea. So you just light them both. They're not doing anything wrong. It's no skin off your back. It's not like denying your perfection. The contrary, that enhances it for you. That's part of Pearson. I mean, no, that's like part of the question in that sugya. I need to know. Yeah, at least when I did sugya, I was like, well, why are you worried about these things? It sounds like somewhat of a far-fetched thing. Who cares? It's not so simple, that sugya. But yeah, in general, that we don't worry about, you know, we worry about what other people think when you're doing something wrong. Usually not when you're doing something right. Yes, Ben?
So going back real quick, just to summarize, it sounds like we could say that if there's like a nice marriage between, you know, the art form, the creative expression that we're talking about, and a true idea,
right,
then there could be a whole experience which is a result, and that could be,
right,
you know, a very good thing. It could help, you know, tie you to reality, you know, do whatever.
Right.
But if we have just a purely, you know, maybe sensual, like you know what I mean, experience, like you just take, you
yeah.
know what I mean, the sensation aspect of the art or of the expression,
yeah.
without any real substance,
yeah.
it's really just sort of waste of time.
Right. Right.
So I mean, it comes out a little bit interesting then, because like, it almost sounds like that means that almost inherently there's like some of the art forms we discussed before have inherently like more value, like by themselves. Like for example, like if you look at theater, film, or poetry, I mean, good theater, film, or poetry has a message, has an idea in it.
Yeah.
But if you look at just music. I mean, obviously, music. It's somewhat difficult to get. You know what I mean?
Get in touch with music.
Get in touch with
music.
Ideas behind music. I mean, there may be a level, but in general, most people just listen.
Right.
Because it sounds nice. Dance.
Right. But even sounds nice. Like you see, for instance, David Amell had music in his harp. That he played his harp or Sefer Shaul. There's an idea of like soothing a person. Sound nice to help them think. So the person could, let's say, help a person relax, and that by puts them in a certain state of mind, and I was able to learn, just like eating a good steak could do that. So there's nothing,
right,
there was nothing
still,
against that.
You're still tying it in with something else.
Yes, right. But
everything
what I'm saying is
in it, like inherent in
oh,
the art form itself.
Oh, and activity, right? And so you're saying.
So it just sort of. I don't know, that's just an interesting
thing
that we're coming out with here.
I wanted to know, I wanted to ask Rabbi Owens, I forgot to do it, but I was wondering if like let's say to do like a movie or a something about, let's say, maybe you think I could do it, but like, let's say like the story of Yosef and his brothers, but like according to like the way Rabbi interprets the whole, I don't know if you've heard different tapes.
I wanted to do that.
But like, or like Megillas Esther. You know, like with ideas. Like to be able to like act it out in a way that actually conveys like the real ideas, you know? Like to really like if you listen to Rebbe, he could give an awesome share about Megillas Esther. Putting together all his different tapes that could tell the story of Megillas Esther. It's awesome. All the details, and it's so cool. Like what better, you know, show would there be than that, you know? Like I wanted to ask him if there's like, is there something wrong with that? Like making a movie about, you know, the thing. But like by Chacham, who knows how, you know, it's gonna be good, like a good movie. But like, who will be true to the ideas of the Torah? You know, is there like? I think there was a thing. I think Plato was against theater because he held like the idea of acting itself is like something of like a falsehood, because you like have to fake emotions or something like that, or Something like that. Like there's like some sort of a lie going on in like theater or something like that. But I don't know. I'm not sure. I was going to ask everybody that once. I just somehow like the thought crossed my mind once because I thought it would be cool. And I, somehow I'm not sure. If, it doesn't seem like we have anything like that. Like theater doesn't seem to be something that Torah has. Like, do you think of an example of that like then?
Yeah, skits. Perm skits.
Perm skits, right. Right. But we have like, we have an example of beauty in the Mikdash. And we have music. Art, I guess you could kind of say like the Mikdash is kind of art, right? Art, like that type of thing. The architecture and the kalim and whatever. But I don't know if we have theater. Like acting. Although I think I could talk to Rabbi Zimmer about this, but I think he wants to claim it's not exactly the same thing, but he wants to claim like the avoda was somewhat of like a show. It's like this the whole, you know, people would come to watch and you'd see from a distance or whatever, but just the whole thing was like done in a way that was like exciting and like was, people could watch it and could whatever, you know. So like it catered. I don't know if that's exactly what the theater is, but like he has like some idea that. There is something like theatrical about the whole,
like,
you know,
this
way that Avodah was done.
I just came out.
Where
God was putting on a show.
Movie?
Really?
Yeah.
Is it
Kurt Russian built into it?
I think so.
What's like a popular movie? You mean?
I just saw the trailer.
Which one?
Really? Noah. Yeah, that's why I thought it would be interesting if someone would make it who would be, you know, maybe that could be.
I had that same idea last year. I was like, what if like someone like that was like ruin all this, all the Torah whenever they do these.
Yeah, because they have bad ideas.
But it's not like the Torah's boring. Like it's.
I know, it's awesome. I know, it's
like,
awesome.
It's way better. So
I know.
What if you just, like, you know, you have the material, it pretty much writes itself.
You're right.
You know what I mean? Have to compile it, and then you can totally present it in like a way that teaches you, like,
I know, ideas. I know, and you have kids to show it to kids or something?
Yeah.
You like to watch Megillah Esther? What, with Megillah Esther or what? Or you have a particular subject or not?
You can
but did
like,
you have a particular thing in mind that, like, or whatever, you just think in general?
I just thought, like, what if you were able to, like, some, like, make, like, essentially, like, you know, I mean, there's plenty of, like, stuff, like, out there that would be fun to watch. Miguel Sester is a great example, and there's like, heck, there's
tons. I was just curious if there's one particular thing. Yeah.
You know, the plus stuff, plus Gemaras, which you could even, you know.
Right, you'd have to have a chacha, you know, you'd have to really do it properly.
Yeah, of course, but like, you know, it's like, I thought, you know, you could totally do it, like, you know, it'd be awesome.
Yeah. You do it? I mean, I could ask Gabby, would you be interested? You do it if it's cool?
We have a greener, a screening. He works in production.
Well, in theory, you could be a guy to make this happen if it was a good idea. Like, if I talked to Rabbi about it and asked him what he's, whatever.
Help, but yeah.
But whatever. But in theory, if it was a good idea, like, I don't know, somehow I'm kind of, I doubt. I'll see. I'll try to sell it to Rabbi. See what happens.
You think he'll produce it for us? We can get someone to do it. It's a screenwriter.
Why YBT Studios?
It's a screenwriter. He doesn't tell us what
they say. Formulate,
ideas?
Like, break him down into, like, a linear storyline. That'd be the hardest part of the whole thing.
Yeah, well, that's, look, obviously, you know, if it's a good idea, you know, I could kind of try to work it out. Like, if it, depending on how good an idea it is, then the matter of each need someone, like, we have enough people who could figure out the ideas. I think we need someone who knows how to do the theater aspect of it, you know?
Oh,
I'm saying it's like, in that aspect of it, you could do it.
I could compile the cinematic.
Yeah, okay. Maybe I'll talk to maybe one of these days. And I'm. I don't know. I thought it would be cool. You know, I was kind of wondering about that. Like, is there gonna be that in Yemos Mashiach? You know, like, is that what's gonna be in the movie theaters? You know, like, I don't know. Something. I don't know. I'm not sure. Somehow, I have my doubts, but I'm not sure. Like, it sounds cool.
So what do you want to do it on again?
Let's say Miguel Sester. I think that's
for
a cool.
Firm.
Yeah. But like, you know. No, but it's like really cool, and it's like, you know, in a way that, you know, you could give shiurim, but there's something to it, like the idea of like a movie, you know. But like it could be like real, especially to people who aren't sitting in the base medrash or whatever. But you could pack in so many.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to like have like monologues, maybe somehow like that they talk out loud, like some sort of running commentary. So I mean, you have to figure out how to pull it off. In terms of, you know, there's like a lot of ideas going on to a discussion. And like, you know, You have a discussion between Mordechai and Esther, which is like six lines, but there's tons of chachma packed into it. So maybe you'll have to elaborate on it, have a longer discussion, or have them talking out loud to themselves, or I don't, you know, I mean, like, it's not easy
there's
to convey.
There's a lot of ways to get ideas across.
Yeah, right.
That's like the whole thing. Like that's really the whole point of
theater, how to do it.
A theater movie is like, is this a way to get ideas across?
Right. Right. I mean, there's a whole. It's a chachma of how to do it. You mean it's not.
There's a million ways.
No, Ben. All you need is we'll get Sammy to sit down next to the recorder and I'll press the play button and Rebbe will give a share.
Right. And some guy like dancing in the background. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hopefully, I'll get a chance to ask him about it. I know. I was wondering about it.
There's lots of creative ways to
dancing.
You could voice people's thoughts.
Yeah, right.
You could do dream sequences, you could do flashbacks, you could do, you could have someone's thoughts actually be acted out.
Yeah, right. Right. Matt, what were you going to say?
It seems like in theory that's what Chris is going through.
Chris McGill, I know, but it's almost like we're not at a level to get the ideas without a commentary. You know? And you could just say... Yeah, right.
That's the
theory,
part of the idea.
Right, it's true.
But yeah, it's not...
Right, it's not worked over enough, though, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
just the
audience is right. Yeah, it's an interesting idea. Especially, like, people are watching movies anyways, you know?
Yeah.
They'll make them good.
Might as well. I mean, the film community wouldn't go for this.
No, but whatever, they don't go for a lot of things.
They might.
Yeah, they might. What do you mean? Ace has videos all over the place. Chabad, they have the Chica Doodle show and whatever. They have all kinds of, like, you know.
True.
It could be for the kids. Kids like everyone watches movies today. Even from people watch movies, they're all going to so this could be all going to but it could be like, you know, with ideas.
There's a big market for that. Like people will go like bananas over the really good.
It's true.
Viral Jewish.
Right. I mean, you could really include like solid ideas. Different age levels.
I think you'd get a lot of circulation if it was really good.
Right. Different age levels also. You could have for like elementary school, for high school. There's like a so totally different style to different people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't McGill's Esther pretty like explicit?
No. You ever heard Rabbi stuff on it?
I heard once you're on
it. It's awesome. It's just not. It's just like, it's much cooler. Like, what was she doing about the parties? Like, what was the whole idea of that? And how did, like, it's cool, but like, when you see the chachma involved in the whole thing, it's like cooler. Much cooler.
There's
much more.
Like sexual undertones,
so what?
I'm just like,
for the movie.
Oh, we're going to have a great movie.
I mean, whatever. You have to figure out how to pull that off. You know, maybe there's ways to do that without, you know. Maybe, I don't know. You're right, I mean, you can't do it in a way which is going to be, like, arousing, you know. I assume it's going to cast a B-rated PG or something, you know.
Y7.
But, you know, you can pull it off probably anyways. But there'd be different age groups, I don't know. You're right, whatever, that's like a detail. That's a detail of the thing, you know. But it's not.
Something like this, I wouldn't be talking to kids personally.
Because the ideas are like, it's a higher level. They're not going to get the ideas.
You don't want to dumb it down.
No, right. It's true. But like high school kids.
You want to target like adults who have no interest in seeing anything that's inappropriate. So.
Right. Or like high school kids.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, I'll try to ask Abby. You know. Look it over with Rabbi Zimmer first, see what we both want to, you know.
Your whole cast here.
Yeah, okay.
Esther,
I get Mordechai.
I'll play everything. I'll play multiple parts.
We're thinking,
Did anyone have twins in the Torah?
The guy that rats out.
I can do my own twin.
What?
Big son.
Oh, you'll be big son? Yeah, you look like a good big son.
We are casting you.
It's going to be a steep competition, you know. A lot of guys are going to be big sons. Everyone wants to be big son, no one wants to be Sarah. I don't know why.
You think we could probably get into Malvern, right? In the theater.
And be thrown out of Malvern.
What is that?
Do they have like garbage eating movies?
Is that like Sundance?
Are we very good
they
at
love Jewish movies.
Yeah, okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, where do we start?
I have a question.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
So you know that idea on the tapes that Adam took part in his own creation?
Yeah.
Adam had that. So do you see from that it could have been that let's say man didn't sin? So then there would be no need to have a Torah, because he was already in a state where he could focus on whatever, a certain way of life that we need, perfect it. So, I mean, I'm not sure if you could really, this is my hesitation. There's a Chazal that says that the Torah was created before,
right?
The world, the universe was created. So, I always thought that meant that, the Torah is like an intrinsic part of the existence of man. So it seemed funny that it would have been possible that man would never have had the Torah.
Right. Yeah. Good question. I mean, it's not clear what would have happened if Adam would have gone the other way. I don't know if he wouldn't have had the Torah, maybe the Torah would have been different, but it's hard to believe that it would have been the same, because it would have been a fundamentally different Adam.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you could say God knew that would happen, but it's a little bit of a cop-out. Well, he knew, like, look, there was a Torah for that guy and a Torah for that guy. You know, he knew that there was, like, two choices, and he could have gone this way or that way, but God knew, you know. If he would have gone that way, they would have been different than this way. But the point is that the Torah is built into the creation, maybe as one, as a possibility. If it would have gone a different way, then it would have been a different way. You know, like a lot of things, like, let's say, like, there's certain, like, nevuahs about there will be, like, a war of Gog and Magog, and then there's other nevuahs about different ways things will end up. You know, I think Rebbe said that they're not every nevuah has to, they all have to happen. Sometimes there are nevuahs about patterns, paths in the Hashgacha. They're not necessarily all actualized, depending on how if we do a tshuva, then we'll have one path. If we don't do tshuva, then we have a different path, you know? So sometimes, like, God's Hashgacha has different roots, and it's based on man's bechira, which root is going to be actualized, you know? So it could be that was a plan in the Bria, to have the Torah and to have exactly what happened. But if man would have been bechira differently, then it would have been a different root. You know what I mean?
Right.
I guess within God's, you know, whatever, to have the different possibilities. And then you say, well, if God knows what's going to happen anyways, is there really a need to have the other one, you know? Like, if he's conveying it to man, so it's value to convey both roots to man. Because man really has Bechira, and so God tells us both of them, and then we could choose between them, so to speak. But insofar as God wasn't revealing it to man, of which the two roots and whatever, so then maybe God knows which one's going to happen. So I don't know if there's any value to say. It's not like God had to show his hand, so to speak, and tell us about both roots.
Right.
So God knew which one it was going to be, so he was free. Man was free, and if he would have gone the other way, then it would have been different. But God knew that he wasn't. Yeah, something like that.
Hey guys, a follow-up question to this?
Yeah.
So, it would seem that when man sinned and he chose a certain path, that he really became like a qualitatively different being.
Right.
So, do you have to say there that, meaning that was a nix, because it had to be God implanted in him, meaning he changed. So that would seem to imply, like, God made some type of change in him.
I don't know about that. I'm not sure, like, if it couldn't be interpreted naturally. I don't know how to do it exactly, but it could be that the situation in his inception, there was, like, some sort of a change which could have happened, dependent on his decision, could be naturally unfolded towards one path or another path. You know, like, a person's decision oftentimes could naturally lead to a whole different path of life that a person could follow. One decision, just according to Teva, could make one guy a whole path of tzedekus open up, and a whole path of rishus open up. So, like, it could be in the incipient stages of man, that decision naturally led to an unfolding of, like, a cascade effect. I don't know, maybe. Or maybe God did something, I'm not sure. You know, it says that God made him Kasnosar. Like, I don't, you know, it's hard to know, like, how much was involved there was miraculous and how much was involved. I don't see a problem saying it's miraculous. It's like, nice and gracious God was involved, you know. But I don't know, that's a question altogether. Is how much of nice and gracious is God doing things, and how much is it God, so to speak, put it into the Big Bang and have it all unfolding, you know. Right. Seems like we definitely hold, like, there is, I mean, that's like looking in Nisim Mitzrayim, there's machlokas, whether, you know, those are built into the laws, or it's like God doing things. So, you know, that's like a tricky question in general, is, like, I don't know how much it matters so much, whether it's God had to actually do something, or is it somehow built, you know, built in.
Cause it, I mean, it is an amazing thing if we say, you know, the theory of evolution,
right.
So then man's creation of himself, basically, it wouldn't have happened for, like, another hundreds of millions of years after the creation of the universe. Very
what?
Interesting thing.
If you didn't,
And with evolution, when you posit evolution, then his own creation won't take place till much later when,
right.
You know, man arises in the world.
Yeah, right. Right, well, that's kind of cool about everything, is how God made all, you know, the Big Bang, which only man doesn't come around until 50 million years later or whatever, you know. But it's all in the cards, so to speak, you know, in the bank.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Right. So, you know, 100 billion years.
I mean, my point is that it wasn't static at that point, because there was one more thing that required
yes.
to be changed.
Well, that's what I thought, that's the idea of Shabbos. I thought the idea of Shabbos is that the universe was in flux until, and the Rebbe said this, until Shabbos. Sheshim Ebreshus, that's why Adam was in the sixth day of creation. But until after Sheshim Ebreshus, Shabbos, basically, the universe reached its stable state, you know, as we know it, so to speak. Everything, you know, the completion of the creation, and now, basically, it's in this, it's reached its, like, final, so to speak, its final state, you know. So that Adam incident was on the sixth day, I think, no? I think. So... whatever, that's part of Bereshis, it's part of the creation. Man played a role in his creation, but that was before, you know, it was fixed.
And then you have Shabbos.
Then you have Shabbos. I think that was before Shabbos. Not sure about that, but...
yeah, with Vayner Shmashos or something?
Yeah, I'm not sure. But, presumably, whatever, that's part of the in those stages, you know. But yeah, it wasn't fixed yet. But neither were the orbits until whatever, and neither were a lot of, you know, so Adam is one final piece of the puzzle, so to speak. You know?
Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Alright. Anything else? Okay, so maybe next week we'll start casting the movie.
Nice. I'll start raising some seed money.
I'll be a carbonist.